Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. The festivities have begun in Washington, D.C., as the death spasms of representative self-government in the United States begin. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, with a brand new, spiffy, redesigned website, courtesy of John Fox in Australia. Head on by and jump in the chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. And when you land in the chat room, you'll be greeted by Anatole, Don from Central PA, Golden Thunder, Jug of Punch, VT Blom, and, of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator now that winter is over in Northern California, apparently, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, that's how you do it, and there'll be... Man, we had a room full of folks last night, and hopefully... More will be on the way this evening as we sort of gather together and brainstorm and think and support each other and hug and pat each other on the back and tell dirty jokes and just try to generally get through what's coming. Okay? Yeah. Also at the spiffy new redesigned HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, you'll find the spiffy new redesigned PayPal interface under the tab Contribute. That's how we keep all this on the air, $200 at a time. And I am proud to say, I didn't expect it, but it worked out this way. Tremendous thanks going out to our subscribers. If you'd like to become a subscriber, we certainly encourage you to do so. Just click that little box that says, make this a recurring monthly donation, and set it and forget it. Pick out whatever number you want. Mr. Soros, $1,000. George. I mean, you can let's just make. Why don't you just cover it? Make it four, five. Do I hear 10, Mr. Soros? I mean, I think it'll take that many numbers. But anyway, for the rest of us, we just put in 10, 20, whatever, and that's how we make up a lot of shortfalls. And that's what happened last night. We pulled up $165 short, but thanks to folks like Dr. Allen down in Texas. We're good for this evening. We can just go forward with our regular fundraising goal. And a quick reminder, Dr. Allen and the Waco Friends of Peace will be providing an alternative to the fascist nightmare that's going to be taking place tomorrow. Instead of the the fascist nightmare, the Waco Friends of Peace will be gathering at the Waco Heritage Park, I believe it is, and as an alternative to show that they do not support the rise of fascism in America, the rise of science denial, the rise of misogyny, hate, xenophobia, all of that. So if you're anywhere near Waco tomorrow, head on by. It will be a much better use of your time than being anywhere near a television set. So thank you. Thank you to Dr. Allen, who's a subscriber, who helped last night. And thanks to Dave in Ohio, who did the same. Thank you very kindly to Tosh. And thank you to Nancy. Thank you very kindly, Nancy in Virginia. And thank you to Joseph in Ohio. And thank you for finishing the rest of it off. Thank you to Peggy in the sandbox. Thank you, Peggy, very, very much indeed. It is exceptional when we get to begin, when we finish with a deficit and get to begin even. I hope, but yeah, that's two nights in a row and a little close for comfort, but still, thank you very much for us being able to do that. Hopefully we'll just, you know, reach tonight's fundraising goal and then move into Friday on the front porch tomorrow evening with nothing more than the evening's regular amount to be raised. So, you know how it goes on any given evening, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13, with the understanding that we raise that extra half penny up to 13 cents instead of 12 and a half, and we put it on the Gulfstream 5 payment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, I never see him, but made payable to the Horn is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay, and like I said, 10 at 20, 20 at 10 this evening, if we're going to be a resistance, we have to be able to stay on the air. And that's kind of all there is to it. So hopefully we'll knock down fundraising earlier rather than later. Thank you again to all of our subscribers, and thank you to Peg in the sandbox. Now, where do we go this evening? I want to share something with you, if I may. You may recall that our dear friend Jen in Australia is not in Australia. She is traveling. When their friend and neighbor had medical issues and nearly got killed by medical neglect, they took off to Italy. Jen and the family did. Graham stayed home back in Australia, and Jen has since been corresponding. And a little bit ago, I got a note from Graham saying, "Bob, I heavily edited an epic email from Jen, so the below is choppy, but I think you may be able to mine a few comforting words from it in preparation for the 20th. And where comforting words relative to the 20th are concerned, we will take all we can get." So, on the road in Italy, Jen writes, subject line, "It is easier to resist at the beginning than at the end. Masks and other trivia." Jen says, "I did achieve complete distraction from the day, so why did I have to check the web and of all things click on this, that Eric, of course it's with a K, Prince, is the demon behind the spitting sulfuric gaseous cabinet pics?" Well, it kind of makes sense with the Betsy DeVos and the Department of Education, right? "Yes," Jen says, "I'm erratically seesawing back and forth about where we should end up, but I think we need to consider a return to the U.S. Oh, I don't feel good about that, Jen and Graham. I don't feel good about that at all. But I understand why. Jen says, "I need to join the resistance and not just in hurried flights. I need to dig in. This is bad. I mean, really, 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 really bad. I've said it's too late, that the fight was needed way back when it would have mattered. But let's face it, the only way to endure this is a big F fight." Of course, this is what the death throes of a political party feels like. The pus, bacteria, and ooze surfacing. The scum must not be allowed to sink back under and incorporate back into the system, but rather be skimmed off and thrown into the incinerator where all toxic infectious bio-waste belong, so that we can return to fighting clean in a forward motion progressively, not round and round and round in a grinding down of all life. I returned to this frame of mind last night I was actually asked for my pizza dough recipe by an Italian. That's saying something. On the way to the train station, we were in agreement that hair plugs, is the face of the U.S. that the world has seen all along. But then Ada said something in her broken English I had to push back against. I'm pretty sure she said, Americans are losing nothing because what we thought we had wasn't ever really there. That which you call loss is merely the veneer being ripped off, forcing you to confront what we have always known. I countered, the American people are losing, i.e. access to health care, education, the ability to vote, consumer financial protection. I conceded that we're not losing a democracy we never managed to establish. Yes, the mask that has fooled no one but ourselves is slipping. Given our origins, genocide, slavery, robber barons, the school of the Americas, is it any wonder the U.S. has been perceived as the land of arrogant bullies? Certainly hair plugs is the ultimate, albeit petty, manifestation of that. But many of us do work ourselves ragged. She pressed back. Americans are very good at seeing the worst in other countries, but only the best in themselves. The feeling of loss is the shattering of an illusion, so convincing you believed your own hype. Number one, exceptionalism. Shining city upon a hill. Land of the free. You have a plethora of honeyed tropes, but far too few citizen warriors working toward a genuine version. It was tough to hear, Jen says, but I learned something important. It won't be all fight. We will be able to live lives while we rumble. Question. How did you survive Berlusconi? Answer. People were much more kind. She told me I have to take that message home. We will survive this by being good to one another. When the pain intensifies, one must go to help others. Not only does the act actually change brain chemistry, but when everybody focuses on helping others, then everybody is helped. And remember, Jen is actually writing to Graham. She's not writing to me. Graham was just kind enough to share this. She says, do you remember the day in Fremantle when I dropped $5 into that homeless kid's hat? And she references another individual. Scolded me that it was just beer money. But you shut her up with, if I lived in a cardboard box, I'd want a goddamn beer on a fucking hot day. And then that very night, we listened to a horn archive and were blown away by Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, recalling the time she came to the aid of a homeless person. Recall the amazing synchronicity? Well, this is a very long-winded way of saying that talking with Ada, as broken as the language was, triggered the same knowing in me, and it's turning into a revelation resolution. She wrote this down for me. Italy is still beautiful because people remained beautiful. Italia è bella ancora perché le persone rimaste belle. That's my pathetic attempt at the pronunciation of the Italian language. My apologies to one and all speakers of that lovely tongue. This was topped off by the words of a 3-year-old who is soon to turn 14, not 4. We were watching a nature documentary about insects and learned that bumblebees are threatened. By the way, can we save ourselves a lot of trouble and just truncate the endangered species list to a picture of Earth? I know all bees are doomed, but no, not bumblebees. It's bad enough I don't get to see them in Australia. Why couldn't they have introduced bumblebees instead of the European wasp? From the mouths of babes. It was mumbled, but I think Nura said, Non abbiate paura. No need of fear. And then in English, so perceptive she knows I struggle with their Germanic Italian. So don't be mean to them. Her proclamation begs the question, which species is the one that, when extinguished, will mark the end? Will it be a mammal, a bird, a form of grass, a reptile, a human? Perhaps that precious little girl's father might be the last loss, the tipping point that brings it all down. I suppose some losses are actually wasted opportunities. I mean, why have a fucking Logan Act if it's never enforced? Though I'll chalk that up to a loss because of the losses that account by not enforcing it. If our world is the sum total of all that matters to us, a fabric or tapestry, as it is so often described, how frayed can it become before it cannot be mended? If the metric to access this is loss, loss of species, loss of friends, loss of icons, loss of leaders, all compiled, weighed, and distilled, how much loss is too much loss before it all falls apart? And what will be the specific single last loss that pulls the final thread? Are bumblebees required by the universe? Are they so necessary that once extinct, when the human species is no longer dominant, has brought itself to its knees and finally comes to its senses? Will the extinct bumblebee be recreated, the scattered particles of its archetype retrieved and reconfigured by the universe because bumblebees are an absolute to the cohesion of the tapestry? I know they are necessary, bumblebees, to childhood. I cannot imagine a parent raising a child without at least once being enchanted by the appearance of bumblebees impossibly bumbling among hauntingly fragrant vines. That moment becomes impressed into two neurons, causing a synapsis, so that years later, when one passes to buy a, say, honeysuckle, one is insistently transported back to the day the child of that brain first saw a bumblebee while inhaling perfume, and so glued the visual to the olfactory to create her own private personal species. What happens to our world if we stop knitting such scraps into the collective? This is what Ada means by we must be kind to ourselves, because if we do not continue to big L live, L grande, the fabric frays beyond repair. So I guess because the fight is to live is the answer to my question, how will we live in any substantive way? There was a memorable sequence of moments on the train, as is wont to occur on trains. Amen. The gravity of my purpose here has sunk in. Yes, I'm a second pair of hands, but more so, a buffer from the worst of the truths. When does it never hurt to ask for daddy and be told he can't come until after? Children don't handle ambiguity very well. Thus, the understandable impulse to protect becomes itself harmful. Hopefully we're distracting her sufficiently so that years from now this frantic sojourn won't hang heavily in her heart. To that end, the sleeper car so thrilled her that it only took one story to get her to bed. She is wise. I know she knows, if not in words, that this flight from Oz to fix her daddy's boo-boo is a rite of passage, but she has no idea that I'm sponsoring her grand tour. Although, wait, perhaps she does know. After all, she chose the Venice Carnival, granted only because she wants to wear a beaked medico mask. I hold out hope. In the end, her inner princess opts for a Columbina, though why she cannot have both, I do not know. Hell, I may end up with two myself, as I'm torn between a Moretta or a Balta, between black velvet and white faux porcelain. I'll let Anne pick mine. Maybe then she'll let me pick hers. She's a very reasonable child that way. By the way, on the train, she helped me change the plugs moniker to the Aryan bleached out yam. Okay, not really. She simply pointed to the words. Hair, plugs, puerile, lewd, unstable, guilty, sadist, or plutocratic, lewd, undisciplined, gangster, Stugatz. Stugatz, no, I did not teach her dickhead in Italian. Though I think I got it wrong. I think that translates to this dick, so it doesn't work. And so, a travel report, courtesy of Jen, on a train in Italia, as they seek for surcease of art's medical maladies. But I think there's truth there. As we deal with what is coming at us, we must be kind one to another. We must try to be helpful. We will not always succeed. We will not always be as good as we should. But if we're trying, there's hope. Because God knows there's threats aplenty. But we will laugh, for we must laugh. Because in amongst the horrors will be monumental opportunities for ridiculous laughter. Ridiculous in the sense that the laughter itself will be its own rebuke of the evil, its own ridicule of the nastiness that will be perpetrated. We will laugh, and it's already there. I don't know if you caught this or not. I'm sure you've heard by now of the great Bikers for Trump wall o' meatheads, or meat. They've applied for a permit for 5,000 motorcycling trumpanzees to stand as a bulwark. Well, they can't. They don't really know that word, bulwark. Stand as a wall o' meat against the left-wing liberal libtard protesters with their Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Yeah. And the bleached out yam, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, fell victim to, and what's the term we're using now? Fake news. Yeah, I know. Fell victim to fake news. Insofar as he tweeted out a photograph of all them wallow meat bikers on the way. Only one problem. It was a photograph from a 9/11 rally rather a long time ago. Bikers for Trump are on the way. It'll be a great Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I saw the Bikers for Trump. Boy, they had a scene today, and they had a scene today where they had helicopters flying over a highway someplace in this country, and they had thousands of those guys coming into town. Oops. Yeah. It was a bunch of bikers, including a whole bunch of people not wearing coats in January, and a lot of really green trees in the background. And yeah, it's from like 2013, from a 9/11 commemoration event. Then there was the another one that, and this is because the goddess of irony never sleeps. Another photograph of a whole lot of motorcycles on a highway. That oops, the baby, turns out, was actually from a YouTube video of a parade of motorcycles in, wait for it, She's a Good Goddess. Hold it. Yeah, a motorcycle rally in Tehran. No, really. Then there was the photograph of a whole bunch of motorcycles on a highway in, like, maybe Spain or something. all of which were put forward by the Trumpanzees as proof that the backers for Trump were on the way to form a wall of meat. There will be opportunities for laughter. And more I am convinced that laughing is not just something we do to relieve our own angst, but that it is a weapon in its own right. Have you ever seen or been around a little battery-operated toy? It's just a little plastic thing, and you just flip a switch, and it begins playing a voice that's like, ha, 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 ha. And if you turn one of those things on in a group of people, eventually everybody starts laughing. It will not be easy, but if there was some way to get people to start laughing at Trump, everywhere he goes, just point and laugh. I mean, the poor fool can't even take a little tweak from Saturday Night Live. And they're not even mean. They're not being mean. They just play him for the laughs that he creates. And it drives him crazy. Uh-huh. And helping each other laugh is part of, at least I think if I understand Jen correctly, is part of being good to one another. Does that work for you? By the way, Graham, if you're listening, and I hope you still are, a note coming from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Please tell Jen, I'm so touched that my stories of helping the homeless resonates with her. It means everything to me. Because there, but for the grace of the mythical Sky Daddy, go I. True. As regards the motorcycles, Earther points out, and I saw a lot of people coming for my inauguration. Sir, those are Sims. It's a computer game. And there were these cool motorcycle guys. Sir, those were... That was a rerun of Chips, sir. Thank you, Earther. Thank you. So we've got that to start with. Now, this is not to say that we will not be facing some outrages. We'll be facing a lot of outrages. But we must figure out how to do it and maintain our own self-care. I think one of the things we must do is be cognizant of what will be, I suspect, the goddess of irony, working overtime. I got a note from Larry. Subject line, Mnuchin comment. Because the Mnuchin hearing was today. There was a lot of Mnuchining. I think we're still working on the definition of the verb to Mnuch. But Larry says, during his hearing today, Steve Mnuchin was taking exception to the characterization of him in such a negative manner because, among other things, Sherrod Brown of Ohio sort of tore him a new one. He said, and I think this is a quote, "Nothing could be farther than the truth." Now, let me not run through that too quickly. Nothing could be farther than the truth. Larry says, my wife and I burst into laughter. It is rare when a Trump appointee says the obvious. nothing could be farther than the truth. Note coming in from Ron in the far frozen north. 5x5 in the slightly thawing north. The cheek must be healing because I can no longer feel my pulse in my cheek. I'm ready for tomorrow. I have some bourbon. Surprise! I have some bourbon. Surprise! Tums, Pepto-Bismol, Excedrin Extra Strength, and lots of fiber-filled food to stave off the possible side effects. Laughing, Ron continues, sarcasm, and the occasional snark has been my salvation since being raised in West Virginia and spending time defending our nation from the horrors of communism. I don't think you get through it, but I don't think you get through the U.S. military without a sense of humor, do you? Mm-mm. So, we got that. Now, the Mnuchin business has been really pretty damned ugly. But has there been a... Has there been a... confirmation hearing yet that wasn't? But I think Mnuchin got as testy as anyone yet. With the various people trying to figure out just how dirty this outfit's going to be. There's been a lot of questions, not just about his own predatory business practices when he was head of One West Bank, which was a foreclosure mill. But also questions about how he, as Secretary of the Treasury, will respond to what will almost instantaneously become a vast, tangled, Gordian knot of financial ethics problems for the incoming president of the United States. Holy shit, I can't believe I have to say that. So, Claire McCaskill of Missouri is a former auditor, and she had a bit of a back and forth with the Mnuchin. It was not pleasant.
Gently.
Come on, we can do this. Oh, I know we can. Oh, it ran great right before.
Take issue with my colleague, Senator.
Really? This is what it was like back during dial-up. Oh, well. Really? Yeah, okay. I guess that's what you get. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. We got a phoneme there. Jeebus. Well, anyway. She asked him about, you know, debts that Trump owes in foreign countries. She asked him if that could have an effect on national security. She asked Mnuchin, if somebody wants to come in and buy one of President Trump's properties, and if the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, which is chaired by the Treasury Secretary, meets and you decide it's going to risk national security, the ultimate decision is whose? And he weaseled around for a while, and then he finally said, it's my decision. At which point Claire McCaskill said, no, it's not. It's the president of the United States. As you make a decision, then it goes to the president, and the president gets to decide. The same guy that I think is going to hire his own ethics person. Then Senator McCaskill dug deep into history and noted, we got the emoluments clause because a foreign government gave a snuff box to the president of the United States. That almost seems kind of de minimis in light of how complicated the international aspect of holdings that the president is going to stay with through his presidency. It was not fun at all. And by not fun, I mean it's more than a little bit nightmarish. When you consider that all these punks and thugs, this billionaires club, has one goal and one goal only. And that is to take apart the government of the United States. It's ridiculous. And by ridiculous, I mean it in its original sense. Subject to ridicule. Questions were asked of Rick Perry over at the Energy Department, who has finally figured out that the Energy Department is not, as his advisor mentioned, the Energy Department is not actually a department. The Secretary of Energy is not a goodwill ambassador for the oil and gas industry. Because that is really what Rick Perry thought he was signing on for, to be a goodwill ambassador of the United States government for the oil and gas industry. Not overseeing the country's nuclear weapons arsenal. You know, Ron, you may have a point there. Going forward, Ron says, let's just refer to the Orange Crush as that guy who says he won the election. Does that spell anything? That's never going to stick, Ron. But the ludicrousness is anywhere you look. Sean Spicer, the official spokes creep for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, was asked, because Pumpkin Spice Hitler had promised to have a Hispanic in his cabinet, they asked Sean Spicer, where's the Hispanic cabinet member? And you know what Sean Spicer's answer was? Well, we've got a lot of diversity in the cabinet. I mean, we got Ben Carson. We got Elaine Chao. I mean, we got Nikki Nimrata Haley, the first Indian American in the cabinet. Yeah, but you promised a Hispanic because every president since Ronald Reagan has had a Hispanic member of the cabinet because they're the fastest growing demographic in the United States. Yeah, but we got Ben Carson. So not only does Ben Carson qualify as a pyramid granaries inspector for ancient Egyptian antiquities, he also now qualifies as Donald Trump's token Hispanic. No, really. It's not a joke. Would you prefer if it was a joke? Yeah, I don't know. Mm-mm. Yeah. And it goes on and on and on. I mentioned Sean Spicer. Well, he held his first press briefing. And of course, it was held at that Trump pile of bricks that they've leased for 60 years in the old, the old post office building. Where he was asked, well, let's, please, come on, goddess of irony, really, this is no time for rubber chickens. Let me play the clip. Apparently not. Damn. Don't know why. Okay, so we'll give up.
That's right, Shane. Sean, last week.
Nope. We're only going to get a syllable at a time, goddammit. We got such great bandwidth here in West Virginia. So let's just, hit the high points on this, too. He turned his first press briefing into an ad for Trump's hotel in D.C. First promoting the fact that the BOA, Big Orange Asshole, according to Ron, the BOA had dinner at the hotel's restaurant last night. And that there were reported plans that he would eat there today. To which Sean Spicer said, I think that's pretty smart. I think the idea that he's going to his own hotel shouldn't be a shocker. It's a beautiful place. It's somewhere that he's very proud of. And I think it's symbolic of the kind of government that he's going to run. It's an absolutely stunning hotel. I encourage you to go there if you haven't been by. No, really. They're going to do product placement in fucking press briefings for the... But more interesting than that is the emoluments issue that attaches to Trump Hotel. And it's actually quite significant. And let's remember, because it was good for a laugh last night, and far be it from me not to wear a joke completely out, emoluments are what Donald Trump thinks you rub on the Russian hookers before they go pee-pee. So they signed a 60-year lease agreement with the federal government for Trump Hotel. But there's a clause in the lease agreement, and it's pretty bright line clear, and it says no federal elected official can be the holder of the lease. Well, Donald Trump is not divesting himself of his business interests. He claims he's just turning over the day-to-day to his little anus mouth gits. So that means he will be the leaseholder. He is the leaseholder now and will be the leaseholder after his hand comes off Abraham Lincoln's Bible tomorrow. There's a difference, however, because after his hand comes off Abraham Lincoln's Bible tomorrow, he'll be the President of the United States. and in violation of the terms of his own lease, which was set up that way because of the emoluments clause. And this is one of those places where you run into some interesting legal turf. That language in that lease is not boilerplate. It's there for a very considerable reason. How do you enforce it, though? Because when his hand comes off the Bible, he's going to be both landlord and tenant. And this is the kind of thing that law professors sit around drafting law review articles over and having heated debates over, you know, the 35-year-old bottles of scotch. Because it brings in one of the more interesting judicial concepts that is a sine qua non to all sorts of lawsuity stuff, i.e. standing to sue. So Donald Trump, tenant, is violating a lease agreement that he's in charge of as Donald Trump landlord. Who has standing to sue over that? Because we know he can be sued civilly. This wouldn't be a criminal matter. This would be a civil matter. Who can sue? Because so-called taxpayer standing or citizen standing is traditionally kind of a tough mountain to climb. Who will do it? Who is impacted, because that's what standing's got a lot to do with, who is impacted by this flagrant violation of the lease? He's the head of the executive branch of the government, so no executive branch functionary can do it. The Republicans control both the House and the Senate, so the House nor the Senate are going to file that lawsuit. The court cannot take action sua sponte because the court has a long-established principle of not issuing advisory opinions. And so what? We just sort of pretend that the law doesn't exist? I don't know. Maybe we'll get some input from Billable Rick, or maybe from Steve in New York, or I think we've got a number of lawyers in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Speaking of Steve points out. Unfortunately, foreclosure industry is the subject line. Unfortunately, I held the knife for a while when I worked in that industry for a bank. Bob, I hated it. However, I learned it, and the fraud that it is, intimately. When I heard Steve, I am mooching today, lament the expensiveness of foreclosure versus modifications, I wanted to cry and scream in anger. Because you need to remember, Steve Mnuchin foreclosed on a granny who had a 27-cent balance on her mortgage. No shit. Anyway, Steve says, I wanted to cry and scream in anger because it's a damn lie. I know the pain that the foreclosure industry caused. I caused some of it, and damn am I sorry. This notion that it is very expensive to foreclose, which is why they were incented to modify, isn't true. Foreclosure mills charged a flat fee for foreclosures, which is why the pleadings and papers are all the same, save for the parties and property description. It's a volume business. These foreclosure mills charged $2,000 to $3,000, soup to nuts, to repossess multi-hundred-thousand-dollar homes to the tune of hundreds of foreclosures per week. And legal fees are completely recoverable, all with interest. In short, foreclosure mills, servicers, and banks had exactly zero out-of-pocket costs to foreclose when it was all said and done. And they got a house back and all the equity that the homeowner had in the property. After years of paying, in most cases, the homeowners got nothing. The banks, servicers, and foreclosure mills got it all. On a general note, Steve says, I've been unable to find any humor today. I've had to turn off any news today because it was all right there in front of our faces. And you know what? It is not near as bad as we thought. It's far worse. In 17 hours, fascism will be here. God, I know, but I'm trying, Steve. I'm trying. Oh, I'd forgotten about that one. Asa points out, Ben Carson being the token Hispanic in the cabinet is analogous to Elaine from Seinfeld taking her boyfriend to Spanish restaurants because she thought he was black.
Yeah.
That's good. Note arriving from Graham. Yeah, I'm here. G'day, Carol. Equally touched that my wife's words are now floating in the cosmos, hopefully healing some small tear in the collective heart. And yes, Bob, laughter. Laugh at him. Jen will love that idea. It needs to become a planned daily thing. I mean, how else do you counterbalance the fact that Eric Prince is an aide-de-camp? God, yes. Keep the laughing and pointing coming. P.S. and perhaps start a betting pool. Apparently, Jen and Ada placed a bet after Jen pointed out that they put up with Bunga Bunga for 10 years, give or take a grope. Jen, and I personally believe optimistically, gives we the peeps 10 months before they demand his head on a pike, but she claims the right to bonus points if it's less than 10 months, because her prediction is he will utterly and completely disgrace himself at the first State of the Union, which he can't cancel his way out of, and it won't even take a Democrat calling out, you lie, to cause the inevitable spectacle of an odious sack of orange goo falling to pieces in a tangle of lies. She bets he will never recover from that humiliation, but will limp along, hiding away more and more in his penthouse, but by the time of the first correspondence dinner, which he will threaten to cancel out of up to the last minute, but not be able to stop himself from slithering out from under his rock and attending, because he'll need to try to avenge Obama's ass-whooping of him, but of course he'll be completely and utterly humiliated, followed by his resignation not long after. This puts Jen's lowball estimate on the betting pool spreadsheet at roughly 5 to 10 months mark. I told her she needs to pick one to qualify, but still hope like hell she's right. You mean you're not gonna let her bet on a 5 month span? I mean, that's a hell of an over and under, Graham. I'm less optimistic, though. Unlike many, do not dread Pence, because the first questions the Dems need to ask upon his ascension is, "What did you know, and when did you know it?" And I'd bet they already have the answers in the can, just waiting for the day. And even if he refuses to admit to anything, there's always an accessory after the crimes approach. So, not sure where Jen is on the betting pool, but I lay claim to the 2-year mark. I think he'll hang on until the midterm elections, when, if there is any justice, the GOP will be humiliated and plugs will crumble. Well, I don't mean to be a little ray of sunshine, but I'm trying to think here. In the first year, does a brand new president deliver a State of the Union? I remember specifically that when Dim Leader ascended to the office, he did not. There was no Dim Leader 2001 State of the Union address. I'm pretty certain of that because I remember going back to the Constitution and looking at it and the president shall. So it may be a year before before his first State of the Union. They're saying that his inaugural address, which none of us will watch, will be something on the order of 20 minutes. And of course, he's repeatedly said that he will write it himself. That's what that goofy-ass photo from the concierge desk. No, really. It was, you saw the Twitter photo, right? Yeah, that's from the concierge desk at Mar-a-Lago with a brand new legal pad with nothing written on it and a brand new Sharpie that hasn't written anything on it except maybe Vlad and Don Forever or Donald J. Putin. Because in the photograph, he's got that kind of far away look in his eyes, like he's dreaming of something in the future. And I'm not sanguine on the idea that anything is going to dislodge him. Now, Graham's talking in terms of resignation. That he'll just hate the job so much he'll freaking quit. And that's the one eventuality that I really haven't much considered. That he'll pull a Palin and just be a half-term half-wit. But the thing is, there's an agenda. And they aim to accomplish it. Things like the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities, which makes up doesn't even rise to the level of being a microscopic portion of the federal budget. And they've got plans to multitask in the national parks and on federal lands. Yeah, you know what Yosemite needs? A couple of fracking platforms. That's what Yosemite needs. Yeah, you know what we need to do in Yellowstone? We need to sink some of those really nifty Bakken crude style wells right there next to Old Faithful, right into that giant goddamn super volcano. Because what could possibly be the harm in that? Okay. Graham says, so Jen needs to take 5 months correspondence dinner. I'm putting her down for that. And Graham says, yeah, stepping down is on his terms, she thinks. And I do agree that impeachment will terrify him. If he steps down, he can spin it, no? Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Impeachment would have to be an inherent possibility. And it is not. They've got the bit in their teeth, or as Hunter Thompson would say, the hogs are in the tunnel and they're going to travel on a road of bones. There's no way this wild-eyed birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, bircher, booger-eater house, and it's equal in the Senate, is going to simply impeach the President of the United States and walk away from the biggest right-wing wet dream possibility it has ever had. This, remember when Bush took office after Ohio was stolen in 2004, January 2005, he said, "Hey, I got me a mandate and I'm going to spend some political capital and I'm going to spend it on privatizing Social Security." And he got stopped. Well, this is a different time. Stopping Trump, and in particular, stopping this Congress, is an entirely different matter. Back then, 2005, the Republicans were a little bit leery of the so-called political third rail. But now there is a Speaker of the House who actively wants to dance Swan fucking Lake on that third rail and tell America to go F itself, Cheney style. Paul Ryan has been typing with one hand and, well, you know what, with the other, over the idea of getting rid of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security for the better parts of his entire life, if there are any better parts. And that moment is here. The Heritage Foundation is about to see its entire wish list come true. And there is nothing, nothing that they will do to jeopardize that. To paraphrase Trump himself, if he starts gunning down people in the middle of Fifth Avenue, they won't impeach him because they've got the work of their dreams to accomplish. They can destroy the health insurance system. They can throw tens of millions of people off of their health care. In individual state legislatures, they can gut workers' compensation and unemployment compensation. They can finally turn this country into the Ayn Randian anarcho-capitalist wonderland that they just know will usher in a golden age of freedom and wealth, you know, for them. Graham asks, how much humiliation can one political party endure? It ain't humiliating when you're winning. If Trump puts the entire Republican caucus of the House and Senate in jockey silks with ads all over them, they will put those duds on in a hurry if they can just finish the destruction of the government they so thoroughly and have so long despised. Graham asks, are the voices of the people really so muted? Yes. What was it, Princeton that issued the study a few months back that showed that the popular will is absolutely meaningless within the context of the formulation of policy in this country, and that money and access and lobbying is everything. It wasn't that long ago, and I'm pretty sure it was Princeton, but somebody will tell me via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com or Twitter or God knows what. I think it was Princeton. And again, I recognize I'm being a little ray of sunshine. But we have to start with the resistance has to begin with a grounded understanding of where we are. This ain't that poppy field outside Oz. This is the fire swamp from The Princess Bride, with the rodents of unusual size. Right? So, I hope that our conversation will go forward under, I mean, you know, maybe Saturday will be a really, really big damn deal. And it will ignite, something all across the country. There are women's marches taking place all over the country. We'll have to see. But the system in this country is designed to minimize the effects of any such popular movement. Graham says, aren't they destruction of the government? Aren't they shooting holes into the boat they themselves are standing in? No, because they will leave enough of the government intact to do that which they deem necessary. And what they deem necessary is that which enriches them and their cronies. They'll leave the Defense Department intact. The Defense Department, in a fascist, look, in full-on fascism, things get really great for the military-industrial complex. It just gets really bad for poor people who want to eat food. And see, right there is there's the heart of the conundrum, courtesy of Carol Baker. Should I spend my last night in a liberal democracy drinking, punching people, or punching people and then drinking? And I understand where you're coming from, Graham. He says, Bob, if I'm going to lose my wife to this fight for 4 years, I need some reason to think that there is at least the potential for some light, some hope? Is that where you're... No, I get it. But where the struggle... I mean, this is a struggle... This is a struggle against fascism. Fascism doesn't give a damn about marches. If the Republicans do what I expect the Republicans will do, the biggest part of the resistance is simply going to be keeping people fed. And warm in the cold. And cool when the risk of heat stroke is high. Making sure that when the next community that pops up and can't drink its own water anymore, organizing what's necessary to get water to them. This is what we're talking about. Because part of fascism's aim will be to dilute the ability of the resistance by rendering people helpless. And then, you know, then there's the question of, you know, God, we talked about it a month or more ago. The article, I think it was in The Guardian, the guy talking about how little teeny tiny things add up to great big disasters. You know, an archduke gets shot in Sarajevo, and the next thing you know, a few million people are, you know, dead in bomb craters in Western Europe. A rat gets aboard a ship in, say, Tyre, and 30% of Europe dies. I mean, I'm not going all George Norrie, Alex Jones. And I joke about the threadbare purple robe with the frayed appliqué moon and stars and the magic eight ball that's got the cracked, answer hazy ask again later on the bottom. And of course, in glow in the dark paint on the, across the front, will thee kiss me in the dark, baby? I joke about that. Every now and then I get one right. But Agnes and I were sitting around talking, and we were talking about, you know, real cataclysms. And how that shit goes around. And I just started thinking. And it gave me the chills. I don't know about you. Because Agnes was worried about Russia nuking us or us nuking Russia. No. I think what we already see is that Trump is going to sidle up to his boyfriend and we're going to announce a new era of cooperation in fighting ISIS. And out of that, various and sundry horrors will be loosed. And somewhere along the way, because these things do just sort of float around the planet a little bit, some aggrieved Asian, Western Asian group will get their hands on a suitcase nuke or couple. Then it becomes geographically a little bit simpler to say set one off in Moscow than in New York. But they're both a possibility. And when that happens, well, wherever it goes off, and I'm betting Moscow, they will then nuke the country that they determine was the point of origin, say Pakistan, or maybe North Korea, or maybe they'll just nuke Syria. Well, then India and Pakistan get froggy. And China jumps in. And the minute China puts the balloon up, then Vlad and his boyfriend, Don, loose the nukes at China, and there goes the neighborhood. Hello, Cinder. Doesn't make for peaceful night's sleeps, those sorts of conversations. Some notes. Carol in Las Vegas says, tomorrow, the party I have voted for all my life, the Democratic Party, is going to witness the horror that they have brought forth by stupidly choosing the worst candidate in the history of the party, Hillary Clinton, instead of one of the best candidates ever in Sanders. I've been listening to excuses for months now, but the fault is with anyone who voted for Hillary in the primary instead of Sanders, period. I blame no one else but them. The ball was in our court, and we dropped it. Well, Carol, I can't agree 100% with you, because people voted based upon their own perceptions of their own needs. I'm deeply frustrated by the fact that the South was and has for a very long time been allowed, you know, states that are never going to go for the Democratic nominee are allowed to establish who is politically viable in the Democratic primary process. And to that end, Bernie started with one foot in a bucket because, well, Hillary Clinton had a machine that was working down there since 2008. But I do respect the fact that Carol points to the primary process and isn't instead hollering that maybe somehow the will of 3 million people should have been supplanted at the Democratic National Convention, 2 or 3 million. So I understand it. And look, you know what my position is on this. I think somebody should have had a sit down with Hillary in 2008 and said to her, as I have said on many occasions on this program, listen, Hills, you just got your ass handed to you by a black guy whose middle name is Hussein 7 years after, 5 years after a war with another guy named Hussein in a country that hates people named Hussein. Hillary, you're never going to be president. Get it out of your head. But apparently nobody had that talk with her because nobody could talk to her that way. Instead, she was surrounded by fawning sycophants who, when push came to shove, did know what her limitations were, but wouldn't tell her. I'm just this little guy who sits behind a microphone in West Virginia, but I figured it out in, what, March, April? When the talk about, the Goldman Sachs speeches was in full swing, and I said, listen, they're going to release the transcripts or the tapes. There's no way those are not coming out. It'll be the equivalent of Bishop Willard Romney's 47% tape. Release them now. Control the narrative. Explain it away. But no, pride goeth before a fall. So I get that. Thanks, Carol. And you know, then there's the economy itself. How long can the Dow continue to go up, 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 up before what's happening in the rest of the country catches up with it and brings it crashing to earth? John writes in and says, our economy is for all intents and purposes fake. The investor class howl and scream about the sacred contract. The priesthood of lawyers demand obedience to the law. The property owners own things like patents, intellectual property rights, and demand the work of the common man to pay for a sliver of these things. As for impeachment, Trump provides cover for the GOP wish list. Exactly. And again, we're behind the eight ball on that one, too, because our elders have gone on. And hell, I mean, my parents were, like I've said, were children during the Depression. My grandparents were adults. And though intelligent all they could really talk about is how hard it was. And the fact that somehow or another they managed to survive. You know, there's a shitload of people that didn't survive the Great Depression. And there are stories out there of pre-Social Security, what it meant to be old in this country and unable to earn, and the miserable depths of poverty that obtained in this country, particularly in the cities. A little bit, not a lot, but a little bit less so out in the country where there were still extended families that where one generation cared for the next. And then the next generation cared for the one before it when that generation got old. That's why our cemeteries, our little cemeteries out the road here, are full of people who lived into their 90s before ever the first nursing home was built. In many ways, that's the most frightening thing about this whole process for me, is that we don't know what it looks like, and we don't know what to expect. And we are, especially on the progressive side, fragmented into a million tiny pieces. With not a lot of great ideas for how to unify. Because that whole unifying behind the nominee well, that one didn't work so well. Kim in New Jersey, subject line, ethics. Ethics? Really? Why are we talking about these thugs and ethics in the same breath? Ethics really is not now and never will be an issue. The Republicans own every fucking facet of this thing. No accountability. I'm not sure what we need to be talking about here. I'd prefer to focus on how the Democrats are going to cave in when they do the reach thing. How many Democrats will vote to confirm these bastards? I expect the dickhead's appointees to be evil. That's a given. What really should annoy us all even more is how complicit the Democrats will be in helping to rubber stamp the nominees as well as voting with them for way too much of their evil agenda. We are so totally fucked, Democrats have never been good at resisting. Kim in New Jersey. And I don't have a lot of pushback for that either. If you want a perfect example, look no further than my senator, allegedly a Democrat, Joe Manchin, who chastised John Lewis and said that his remarks about Donald Trump not being a legitimate president were uncalled for, unnecessary. Well, Joe, you privileged prick, you're really not in a position to declare what is and is not called for and what is and is not necessary in regard to the opinion of a man who has put far more on the line of himself and for this country than you will ever do. But that's just me, and I'm mean. All right, well, this turned into a rather epic filibobster. A note coming from Kitty in Boston. Trump sought military equipment for inauguration. Kitty says, from the Huffington Post this evening, during the preparation for Friday's transfer of power, a member of Trump's transition team floated the idea of including tanks and missile launchers in the inaugural parade, a source involved in inaugural planning told the Huffington Post. They were legit thinking Red Square North Korea-style parade, the source said, referring to massive military parades in Moscow and Pyongyang, typically seen as an aggressive display of muscle flexing. The military, which traditionally works closely with the Presidential Inaugural Committee, shot down the request, the source said. Kitty, in Boston, adds editorially, Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, where do you think he got the idea? He got it from his boyfriend, Vlad!
Yeah, what do, Donald, what you need to do is have tanks and missile launchers right down Pennsylvania Avenue. It will look terribly impressive. And then, of course, we will have parade here to show you that we, too, are strong allies of the United States. You're so cute. I really dig you.
But you know what? The military may have shot it down this time. But you can't always count on that once he starts appointing his own heads of the military. Huh? Yeah? Right. So here we are at the halfway mark of the program. I need to make a little bit of an announcement. I should have at the beginning of the program, but courtesy of Dr. John, there is a $50 challenge on the table this evening to help us keep pace with fundraising. Dr. John will match the first $50 that come in, turning that into $100 and getting us halfway toward the fundraising goal for the evening. Everybody knows I hate talking about this. But it is how, you know, until George Soros sends us the great big Soros money check, it's how we keep this going. So there's a $50 challenge on the table. Thank you, Dr. John. And hopefully folks will respond in short order. So let's take a little break at the halfway point and then come back to some conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Hey, Matt, out in San Francisco. It's stereotype time. How about a little show tune? I think this might speak to all of us. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When darkness falls, for cabin walls would be just right for me. I need a threshold I can cross where I can sit and gather moss forevermore. A million miles away behind. Plains, there's too much view for me. There's so much space between the waiting heart and whispered word. It's never heard. One room will do for me, where every evening I can stare at someone smiling from his chair. A million smiling from his chair across the floor. A million miles away, behind the door. No fears, no fools, no lies, no rules, just doing with my life what life.
It's Thursday, January 19, 2017.
But I need you also to be worried about human health.
Democratic senators grill Trump's EPA pick.
I think where there's debate on it is what that influence is.
While his Interior Department nominee denies scientific consensus. Obama slips in one more parting gift for the planet, plus...
Global temperatures hit a record high in 2016.
It's official. 2016 was the hottest year on record for the third straight year in a row.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What the American people are expecting here is the EPA... doesn't turn into every polluter's ally.
Well, the American people are just going to have to lower their expectations, aren't they, Senator? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you're covering a number of the confirmation hearings on today's Green News Report. However, as we go to air, former Texas Governor Rick Perry is about to begin his confirmation hearings as he has been named to be Donald Trump's Secretary of the Department of Energy. And the New York Times reports yesterday that when Rick Perry accepted that job, he had no idea what the Department of Energy actually did.
Oh, dear.
He thought it was for oil and gas.
Nope.
It's for nuclear issues.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, it'll be great.
Meanwhile, Scott Pruitt, the Attorney General of Oklahoma, got a grilling from Democratic senators on Wednesday during his U.S. Senate confirmation hearing to head the Trump Administration Environmental Protection Agency. An agency he spent his political career attacking. Pruitt has no environmental accomplishments, but has sued the agency numerous times on behalf of corporate polluters to block, delay, or weaken pollution standards that protect public health, clean air, and clean water, and fight climate change. A big question is whether Pruitt will recuse himself from the lawsuits he launched against the EPA as Oklahoma Attorney General. If confirmed, he could revise or cancel those regulations or settle those lawsuits. That's a huge conflict of interest, as noted by Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts.
If you don't agree to recuse yourself, then again, you become plaintiff, defendant, judge, and jury on the cases that you're bringing that right now as Attorney General of Oklahoma against the EPA.
So he's talking about the idea that Pruitt could settle EPA lawsuits that he himself has filed. He would be settling suits that he has filed now against himself?
Settling with himself, yes.
Nice work if you can get it.
Pruitt disagrees with Donald Trump that climate change is a hoax, but he is skeptical of how much human activity is to blame and what, if anything, government should do about it.
Science tells us that the climate is changing, and then human activity in some manner impacts that change. The ability to measure with precision the degree and extent of that impact and what to do about it are subject to continuing debate and dialogue, and well, it should be.
Notice what he did there. He slipped in two things. He said how much man is involved in climate change is subject to debate, and what we should do about it is subject to debate. That last part is true. That first part is false.
Meanwhile, Montana Congressman Ryan Zinke also peddled a similar dodge in his confirmation hearing to head the Interior Department. That manages the nation's public lands and natural resources. Like Pruitt, Zinke, too, questions the man-made part of man-made climate change, but he threaded a bipartisan needle on balancing conservation and industrial development. He supports fossil fuel extraction on public lands, but he's against privatizing them.
I want to be clear in this point. I am absolutely against
transfer or sale of public land.
Good. That's a clear
answer. Can't be any more clear.
No, you can't. Thank you.
So far, all of Trump's cabinet nominees have transitioned to that next stage of climate change denial, that denying the global science consensus that humans are to blame for global warming and debating the necessity of phasing out fossil fuels to avoid catastrophic impact. Meanwhile, a new Reuters poll finds that more than 60% of Americans want to see the EPA's authority preserved and strengthened, and they want to see the drilling of oil on public lands either hold steady or decline. Against that backdrop of denial, NASA and NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, made it official. 2016 was the hottest year on record globally since record-keeping began in the 1880s, breaking the record for the third year in a row, which is in itself also a record. The New York Times reports, quote, temperatures are heading toward levels that many experts believe will pose a threat to both the natural world and human civilization, and will continue to exceed records. Finally, some good news. The Obama administration gave another last-minute gift to the world, fulfilling a promise made under the historic United Nations Paris Agreement, paying another $500 million into the UN Green Climate Fund that helps developing nations prepare for climate impacts and leapfrog to renewable energy. That money can't be taken back.
And not a moment too soon, literally in every way. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we could not get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. We'd also appreciate your support to help us stay on the air by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All we are is dust in the wind. Eureka! 22 minutes before the hour. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very, very kindly for meeting Dr. John's challenge. That means we've only got $100 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very much indeed. That is tremendously helpful in keeping all of this going. Let's run over to the stress line and see what's happening down in Texas way. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Stand by. All right, Keith in Texas, do we have you?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Well, I've come to the conclusion that in this country, we no longer have health care already. We don't have to wait for it to disintegrate. My wife, the loving soul that she is, had a stroke in September. And we've been dealing with that. She had insurance. Good insurance, until her employer canceled it and didn't tell us. We found out yesterday.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, we went to Social Security to get her started on disability, which they were exceptionally nice and helpful. But the insurance should be eligible for Medicare. But in the infinite wisdom of our Congress, they changed the waiting period from 1 year to two. So now she'll be out 2 years waiting for Medicare.
And of course, in a state like Texas, Medicaid is no help whatsoever.
Nope. Not at all, because we can't even get on it because of my income.
Right. In a place like Texas, if you've got more than a cardboard box to live in, you're out of luck.
You're exactly right. So I determined that last night I was thinking about it. I was listening to your show last night. I listen just about every night.
I know, and I appreciate it.
I've determined that we don't have health care. We have wealth care. And the reason I say that is that's all they care about is wealth. How much can I get? How quick can I get it? And screw everybody else.
You know, I would give you a cowbell for that if it wasn't so damn sadly true. But there's no humor in it, Keith. And look, I mean, we've kind of known elements of this all along. Having high quality health insurance is no guarantee because, as you noted so heartbreakingly, you can lose it. And the fact of the matter is, the only answer to that is for everybody to be covered, period.
Exactly.
I don't mean to pry, Keith, but how are you going to do this?
That's the problem I haven't figured out.
Can you go to a humane state?
I myself am on disability. And by the time they take out for Medicare and for the drug plan, I think I bring home $850 a month. And we still don't, she doesn't, because of that, she still doesn't qualify for Medicaid.
Sweet Jesus. So, but, you know, the thing is, And I can't even, but what we're talking about is the kinds of hard decisions that are going to be forced on people. About the only thing you could do would be to go to a place like California or Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Where they've got enough economic oomph on their own, not to let a bunch of right-wing jackals do them in.
Well, Department of Energy secretary nominee that is our former governor.
One of his last
great acts when he left office was to change the income eligibility for Medicaid in the state of Texas. It was I can't remember if it was $500 or $750 a month income, he dropped it to $250. So if you made over $250 a month, you don't get Medicaid, period.
God, what an act of brutality.
And the people, just like us now, that are caught in between, we have nothing. We're screwed. You know, she was going to speech therapy 3 days a week and occupational therapy 3 days a week. We can't do that now because it's $300 a visit. So that's $600 a day.
I can't, Keith, I got no words.
But I didn't call to lay out my problem, Bob.
Well, no. I'm glad you shared, because people need to hear this reality. This is what's on the line, and frankly, if the Congress repeals the Affordable Care Act, it doesn't do anything to or for you, does it?
No, because we're in between. I mean, you know, we're in the hole. And I don't have the reverb, so.
No, I get it, but.
But, you know, she's an RN. She did home health. And she worked as a nurse for 37 years.
And this.
She has.
Well, I mean, if I can ask, and I don't mean to pry, Keith, but how did her employer just cancel her insurance out from under her?
They told us just after this happened, don't worry about it. We're going to keep your insurance active. They had Blue Cross Blue Shield. It was a group policy. My wife's got multiple health problems, and this just compounded it. But they sat across the desk from us and told us, don't worry about it. We will keep your insurance active. So that's one thing you don't have to worry about. We've been going along all this time until yesterday, and we found out, and I called the insurance company myself, and they said the policy was canceled November the 1st. So we've been riding along for 2.5 months now.
And had no idea.
There's no telling what kind of stack of bills we're going to get.
You certainly didn't call for and don't need my advice, but I'll offer a little bit of it anyway. It's time to go talk to a lawyer.
Well, don't you know if I can afford to do that?
Yeah, I know. None of the lawyers who are in the Horn family can offer official legal advice, but maybe offer some guidance along the way. Of course, it's Texas, so, you know, it's probably an at-will employment situation, right?
Yep, it is. Texas has been an at-will state for as long as I can remember, and I'm 50 years old.
Steve, who is a lawyer, Steve in New York, asks, where in Texas is Keith? I might know a couple of people who can help.
I am on the Louisiana. I am not even 20 miles from the Louisiana border, southeast Texas. Just about 25 miles south of the very famous Jasper, Texas.
Ah, well, Jasper, yes. No,
I was actually born and raised in Jasper, but I've been in a little town south of there called Kirbyville for 25 years. And from what I've heard you describe, Bob, about people in that area where you are with the Confederate flags and all that, you write it home here.
Oh, I have no doubt. I mean, when you're that close to Louisiana, it's practically not Texas anymore, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of people that have rings around their ankles from walking across the river. That's the old joke.
Well, do me a favor, please. I'm getting a few messages because this is touching a lot of people, Keith. Shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. And I will then forward an email on to you from somebody who says that they have a little bit of experience with this. And I'll share that with you. And then now that Steve knows, maybe he knows somebody down there. God, how fragile are we all? I mean, this never dawned on you and your wife, did it?
Nope. Now you want to know the topper?
Oh no, there's just more.
Happened. Just happened on 9/11.
God Almighty. Dear heavenly days.
So, anyway, Bob, like I said, I didn't call to lay off my problems or anything of that nature. I just kind of wanted to lay out and let people know that this shit is real.
And gonna get more so. That's I'm flummoxed, I'm gobsmacked, Keith, and I hate to hear all this, and I hope maybe some members of the Horn Family Community Congregation can offer up a little bit of help, a little bit of guidance, a little bit of something that might provide you a degree of and particularly your lovely wife of relief.
I'm a former paramedic. She's an RN, and we've seen people without insurance. We've helped people without insurance. And we both said the only way that people can be sure is if everybody had insurance.
And, you know, would hearing a recording of this change Paul Ryan's mind, do you think, Keith?
My phone's breaking up, Bob. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was just, one wonders about the monsters who are trying to hurt America. Do they even care? I mean, I'm sure Paul Ryan would say, "Well, you know, we're gonna give Keith and his wife a tax subsidy." Well, you don't need that, yeah. Do you?
No, a voucher won't help. For $1.98 voucher is not going to help me or anybody else, for that matter. That is the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard in my life. And that's exactly what it is. People need stability.
People need care.
Well, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
If you don't have wealth, they don't care. And they want to increase their wealth.
And that's a lesson that they teach. With a closed fist, too, by God.
I listened to Randy Rhodes for a little bit today, and she was playing excerpts of these Senate hearings. And all I heard was word salad, and just, it made no sense. And these are the people who are going to put in charge of this country. To look over us and guide the principles of this country? Really?
Yeah. And it just sit there kind of with your mouth hanging open, catching flies, don't you?
Yep, exactly. I've never seen anything like this. And I will tell you honestly, before the election, when they would show Herr Klump,
nice.
I would see, they would show these still pictures of him standing at the lectern and waving out to the crowd. And I had flashbacks to documentaries that I had watched on 1930s Germany. And it's coming true, Bob.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is, they're excited about it. I saw a photograph. Our buddy Ben Birch posted it on Facebook today, of Klansmen merrily walking in D.C. yesterday as they get ready to mark the great day of joyous celebration tomorrow. Klansmen, they'll be there in their robes.
Yeah. Well, another thing, I've always tried to fly the American flag as much as possible, especially the holidays. And I've been watching more and more. It started out with the South Carolina deal. I don't remember what year it was. Has it been 2 years now?
You mean Charleston? A year and a half.
Whenever they started the getting up in arms about the Confederate flag.
Yeah, well, they've been doing that for years, but it came to a head in June of 2015 with the murders at Mother Emanuel Church.
Right. Well, around here, when that started, you could not spit without hitting somebody flying a flag in the back of their truck.
Oh no, I'm still seeing it here.
Well, now, since the election, the day after the election, I'm seeing the U.S. flag fly in the backs of trucks. But it also, at the same time, makes me feel like that the flag is being perverted.
That almost always happens in fascist regimes. Flag waving is a big part of it. You won't be able to swing a dead skunk in Washington, D.C. tomorrow without hitting a flag.
Well, it kind of makes me not want to put my flag out because I don't want to be a part of what's taking place. I don't want to be seen as a participant or, like you would say, a collaborator. I want no part of that.
Or a normalizer.
Right. I've got so much that I can't really describe. Disgust would be one word for it, I guess, but that's just one word of it. TV is not a good thing for me anyway, because there's nothing on to watch anymore. But if an image of him comes up on TV, I just have to change the channel. I can't do it.
And that's for the next 4 years, or at least until he runs away in terror and disgust. I mean, I hope Jen in Australia is right and that he quits. But I don't think his inner circle is going to let anything get to him. His job is going to be to sneer and scowl. And there was a Washington Post interview where in the middle of the interview he said, "Wait, quick, copyright this. Keep America great. No exclamation point. It's just what we're going to be using for 2020. Keep America great." So now we've got our answer, Keith. America wasn't great until he was elected. Now the again is gone. Now America's great, so we got to keep it great.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at with the flag. It's like, all of a sudden, you're proud to fly the flag? I guess because that one in our White House is getting out.
Right.
It's time to fly the flag again.
Yeah, no more Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, right?
Exactly. Oh man!
I know, and all we can, it's like that line from the movie Mate One. I keep quoting, "All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it." But I feel something less than comfortable saying that to you because I know you've got more than you can bear or share.
Well, I'm gonna figure it out, Bob. It's just. It's not going to be back. If you've ever been kicked in the gut, I mean really kicked in the gut, that's what it was yesterday.
God, I wouldn't be okay 24 hours later. I'd still just be sitting with my head in my hands.
Well, it still sparks. It really does. So.
Well, I reckon so. We got a lot of people reaching out, hoping to be of some sort of advice or help, And I'll pass that along as it arrives, Keith. And please give our fondest best wishes and hopes to your lovely wife. Please do.
I will.
And
thanks, Bob.
You have a good evening and holler in any time, okay?
All right, Bob. Thanks.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's our buddy Keith down in Texas. Every now and then, we get a reminder of just how brutal this country is. And if that's not a reminder, I don't know what is. You know, Graham
noted. He said, oh my fucking God, I left the room for a few minutes. Bob, this is unbelievable. American governance has become a goddamn Rorschach test. Yeah, it is. And all the ink blots are swastikas. Let's run on over, and by the way, thank you. Thank you very, very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus. Thank you very kindly. We are now under the $100 mark for fundraising for this evening. Thank you very much. It is appreciated. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry. Yo, Angry.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. There you are.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell just happened right there. Anyway, what's up, man?
I don't know. I mean, it's we talk about things here in the abstract, I suppose, and then we get it brought to us in concrete reality, like what Keith just had to say. And
yeah, I mean, I mean, I really do hope whoever the fuck is listening into these shows, you know, actually got a little breath of humanity listening to Brother Keith, because what if that is your family? But see, the thing about it is, it shouldn't have to be, what if this was my family or what if this was my neighbor? It should just be, why should anyone in the 21st century have to fucking live under these goddamn conditions?
Well, this is, when we have Angry, so this is not rocket science, okay? The rest of the developed world and some parts of the not fully developed world have figured out universal single payer coverage.
Well, hey, they kept telling me when I was a schoolboy with the physical ed that we were doing that it was part of the Kennedy program, that it was started by the Kennedy administration because they realized that the Chinese and the Russians had physical ed. And then, like, you know, the healthier you are, the less you're a strain on the medical system, the less you know, you can go to work, you can produce more. And we were told this every morning when we were doing our exercises, that this is something that President Kennedy got started so that Americans could be strong and fit. And that when you're fit, you don't get sick. When we were doing our push-ups, our chins, our knee bends, all of that.
Yeah.
But, you know. That's just common sense. If you have a healthy and intelligent population like, say, Cuba, then you can withstand the weight of the world. Matter of fact, you can withstand.
Yeah, nobody in Keith's wife's situation is getting their health care taken away in Cuba or in Canada.
Yeah.
Or Germany or Sweden or the UK.
Mm-hmm. Or anywhere in the Netherlands, for that matter.
No.
Anywhere in Scandinavia.
Nowhere in the developed world. I mean, I remember a long time ago when I was having that cup of coffee in law school, and my torts professor said there are three places on earth you don't want to get sick. Anybody? And, you know, show of hands. And the answer was China, Iran, and the United States of America. Because we really don't give a damn.
Well, not unless there's profit involved.
Well, sure. But, I mean, and 2 years? 2 years to wait? That's insane. It's past insane. It's psychotic. It is,
yeah, but,
it is sadistic.
Yeah, but under their rhetoric, it's his fault because he's not rich. Because if he was rich, then he could buy his own health care. He could buy the best health care that he could afford. That's exactly
right, and that's precisely what Keith said. You know, we don't have health care; we have wealth care.
But, you know, what really gets me is, what really galls me, and, you know, I hate to go to Walmart. It is painful. I never spend any money there, but it's always somebody, I need to stop at Walmart. Okay. And I'll go along with them. And, you know, these are some of the most unhealthy Americans I have ever seen. And they're eating this cubed fried chicken thing that's put in a cup. And they walk around the store with it, and the kids are behind them, and everybody's belly is hanging over whatever trousers they're wearing. A lot of these Make America Great people wearing shirts that say Make America Great. At least 150 pounds heavier than they should be. I mean, 18, 24 stone size folks wearing bedroom slippers and... you know, I don't know, but Walmart is fucking scared. But, you know, it fucking amazes me that these people voted against health care. And I'm looking at them and listening to them wheeze. And you can look at someone's skin and their face and tell they're not fucking healthy.
You mean that lovely, that lovely shade of gray?
Yeah, you know. And then the others with the hoverounds. You hear them whining about anchor babies. While they're angry with you because you don't move aside so they can come down the aisle in this fucking thing, right? But they just voted to cut all of their goddamn benefits off.
Oh, it was years ago now, Angry, but I was in D.C. I, you know, walked right past a woman in a hover round with a sign that said, keep your government hands off my Medicare. Okay, but see, now Paul Ryan wants to come after her Medicare, and she's going to be nowhere to be found because, you know, that one ain't in the White House no more.
Well, they're complaining, though. Over the past several days, I've been seeing and hearing various things on Twitter where these conservatives, Republicans, GOP all, and a handful of self-described libertarians, they're organizing on their own, on Facebook primarily, to like what they're going to do if Obamacare is really cut for them. Because a lot of them, if you read what they're saying in these forums, they really didn't think that they were going to be cut. They really thought that he was just going to cut the immigrants and black people would be cut because they don't think that any black people have jobs unless they're boxers or basketball or football players or something. So they just figured that they wouldn't get, you know, they wouldn't lose their benefits because they think, you know, from what I'm seeing, that if you're working, then you deserve health care, provided you're working white and pay taxes and believe in America. So somehow within their minds, they've got it twisted that the only people who were going to get cut were the people that they didn't like. And now they're starting to realize that not only are they going to have to pay for this motherfucking wall that he's talking about, because Trump has already admitted that after he's already admitted over the weekend that, yeah, the Russians did hack into the fucking DNC and RNC service, that they're going to fucking lose their goddamn benefits. And they're wondering what they're going to do. You know, how they're going to pay for all of this. Because, you know, they're the ones that are out of work, right? And, you know, they're the ones that are on the bottom of the totem pole, as the New York Times is reporting, that white people in America are somehow this depressed ethnic group. So this is what the conservatives who want to maintain Obamacare are operating under. And you've played audio yourself of Republicans who were stumping for Trump, holding up signs by the roadsides, but who were asked by Brad Blog and people like that, what about Obamacare? And they're like, yeah, Obamacare is good, but, you know, get rid of Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And my question for you and other listeners is, what are we on the left going to do with this? Are we going to sit here and try to work with them, or are we going to tell them to fuck off like we should?
And I know where I am, and I think I know where you are. But... Let me ask you this: with the Affordable Care Act debate, it doesn't lend itself to quite such a stark dichotomy, does it?
No, of course not. You know, so that, so again, that's my question. You know, what is the left, you know, whatever the fuck the left is supposed to be left of? You know, there's no more John Reeds and shit. You know, so it's like, you know, where are we now on the left here where we're still holding out a hand to these motherfuckers?
Well, when you consider that a significant, at least as far as I can tell, a significant number of the Purity Brigade have joined the Vladimir Putin fan club.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to come up with a unified left, and you'll have a hard time convincing me that that was not a deliberate bit of divide and conquer.
Oh hell yeah, man! You know Russia knew what the fuck they were doing, and no, I'm not blaming them entirely for this, but they certainly saw the rift and decided to fucking make it wider, and they certainly goddamn did. You have the Women's March here that invited or allowed an anti-abortion group to march with them under their banner and kept defending.
I saw that saying, you know, this is not the time for us to let issues divide us. Well, yes. Fuck!
Shit.
I mean, pardon me, but doesn't that sort of, I mean, a priori, doesn't that divide them? I mean, are there anti-abortion women out there who didn't vote for Trump and are aggrieved by, you know, grab 'em here and grab 'em there?
Apparently not.
In regard to the Affordable Care Act, angry. I mean, get this. Okay, if we had a viable opposition, maybe we'd say, all right, you want to tweak the Affordable Care Act? Let's create a public option that is available to everybody in all 50 states.
Oh, you mean communism?
Let's pass Medicare for All. Not mandatory, but if you want it, you can buy into it.
You mean communism?
Well, that's what they call it now, isn't it?
You know, I mean, that's, you know, everything that the military gets, you know, Medicare, seniors, all of that. And of course, you get the argument that, well, if you served, you know, the United States, if you defended America, then you deserve health care. What about everybody else? No, you don't deserve shit.
Well, hold your horses because you know, I'm a member of that school that believes Trump when he says, and the Republicans generally, when they say they're going to do something. And one of the things that he said he was going to do was privatize the fucking VA.
Yeah.
Now, how are our wounded warriors going to feel about that?
Well, I don't know.
You know, when they've got a 20% copay and a $2,000 deductible because they got an IED brain injury in Iraq.
I got a buddy. He's got his leg all fucking ripped up right now. He was just driving a truck. You know, he promised his wife he tried to get the softest tit job he possibly goddamn could. Driving a truck. He got his fucking leg ripped up by an IED any goddamn way. I asked him, how's your money? He says, man, it's fucking what money? He said, they tried to pretend that they don't even fucking know me, man. You know? And this was under Obama. But, you know, well, let's just say this was under Obama, but here's the Bush and Cheney administration. And, you know, you've had Katrina Pearson now, who was out here stumping for Trump, saying that when Obama invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. And this is the sort of motherfucking mentality that's going down there tomorrow to this inauguration. You know, the few people that are going. I mean, have you heard? They're not really fucking big. They're trying to give away tickets, and people don't want them.
Scalpers can't sell them.
They can't sell them. But Azalea Banks, though, says she wants to perform for Trump. So let's see if Snoop Dogg, because I sent him a message on Twitter. You can go check it.
Yeah, I saw.
The Angry Ended on Twitter. I sent Snoop Dogg a personal goddamn message on Twitter. Since you said that you were going to clown all these goddamn rappers, the first rapper that showed up, Jennifer Holliday wasn't a rapper or isn't a rapper. But Azalea Banks sure goddamn is.
But she bailed. But Jennifer Holliday bailed the hell out too, didn't she?
Yep.
Well, and here's another thing. I don't know if people are aware of this, but in regard to the representative member,
whole bunch of House members boycotting the inauguration. Not one member of the Senate. Not one. But anyway, Representative Philemon Vela is a Democrat from Texas, member of the House. He's from Brownsville. And he had initially planned to be there tomorrow, angry. But he's not going now. 40 migrant students from his district came to visit him and were touring Washington, D.C. He said, while visiting Washington, D.C., 40 migrant students from my district were subjected to comments of beaners, burritos, and wetbacks from inauguration attendees. One student was even spit on. Then Donald Trump made his final cabinet selection, ensuring that there would be no Hispanic representation in the cabinet for the first time in 36 years, he noted. So he's out.
I heard it's about 65 that said they're not going to show up now.
But not one senator.
Well, he doesn't care. I mean, you know, for
no,
him,
but
for
no, but I like care. Him. I care. I damn well care. Is Bernie going to be there tomorrow?
Yeah, I've been wondering about that. Clinton's going to be there.
Is Elizabeth Warren going to be there tomorrow? Is Sherrod Brown going to be there tomorrow? Is Kamala Harris going to be there tomorrow?
Carter's going to be there.
I understand.
Carter's going to be there. Well, no, I don't. You know, but I mean, I know, and I don't want to be harsh to him. And there's a lot of criticisms, actually. And I voted for him, that I can say about Jimmy Carter. But I will say he gave a damn about his own country, which is not the same thing I can say about Trump. That's not the same thing I can say about Trump. You know, in a stupid way, I can actually probably say that W, you know, who really probably didn't even know what the fuck was going on around him, probably gave more of a fuck about, you know, the affairs here than Trump does. You know, Cheney was really running every goddamn thing, and I really don't think W really fucking knew what the hell was happening. And if you wanted to believe Ray McGovern, who was a personal friend of Herbert Walker Bush, who was in the hospital right now, by the way, and so is Barbara Bush. They're both hospitalized right now. He's got pneumonia and she's got bronchitis. So, you know, yeah. I don't know. And even with Pappy Bush, he knew where the fuck to stop, you know, where the line was drawn. Did I agree with any of his goddamn politics? Absolutely not. But he cut money to Israel when nobody fucking else would. He identified and actually passed the law to stop prison rape when nobody else was even willing to fucking talk about that in the White House. I mean, there's things that I can talk about in terms of Nixon that was actually somewhat goddamn positive. But when you look at Trump, you're just saying, you know, well, goddamn, this is somebody with absolutely no motherfucking coup, who is a clear fucking agent. He's in the pocket of Moscow. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. And I'm tired of you motherfuckers on the left that were within the sound of my goddamn voice who have a problem with me saying this, talking about I'm doing some sort of paranoia about Russia. Get fucking real. Putin was never a goddamn communist. What the fuck are you guys about, man? I mean, goddamn. But then again, you're looking at Twitter fucking, you know, who follows them and who they follow, and they follow, you know, InfoWars and fucking David Icke, a lot of these goddamn people, or Cyril Hedge. You know, I mean, it's fucking maddening out here, Brother Bob. It's maddening out here.
Oh, I know.
You know,
crazy
white folks, you got crazy black folks, I mean, crazy Asians. It's fucking, you know, Arabs are losing their fucking minds. Everybody's going berserk. Nobody's trusting any fucking buddy. We're all bullshit to each other.
Right, and simply trying, you know, to hang on to one sand. We're rapidly approaching a critical mass point where simply hanging on to one's sanity is a radical act.
Is a radical act, which is nuts. Which is nuts. I mean, even the yippies kind of called this bullshit when they said that everything is fucking ridiculous now. You just don't realize. You're laughing at me because I'm not bathing.
Well, I just got a note in from Steve in China, and I think this is worth sharing. Excuse me. You are already paying for the best health care you can afford. You're just not getting any, especially when you need it. And I think that I think that point is well taken. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like the Treasury wasn't opened and a river of gold was poured into the health insurance industry. That's a fact.
There's a few ways we can look at that. Yeah, I mean, there's a few ways we can look at that. I mean, if you want to get to the conspiracy angle, I mean, that whole shit about the vaccines is nonsense. But at the same time, you know, we could talk about the cancer rows that we have in this country. I mean, the majority of them are Black and Native American, but your community is a cancer row, you know. I mean, how many people are sick in Appalachia right now from what the fuck is being done to the environment down there in the name of energy? Independence.
4,000 statistical excess deaths per year. And that's just the folks who die.
That's just the ones who die. And how many people are walking around with issues that are going to be fucking with them? And that's not excluding black lung.
No,
matter of fact, you know, Brother Bob, because, you know, I got listeners on my own show who listen to your show who really would like to hear because they don't have an understanding. And they tell me that they don't know really where to look for the information. What the fuck is happening in Appalachia?
We're hanging on for dear life. Look, I mean, you asked me no questions. I'll tell you no lies. The struggle against mountaintop removal is struggling to survive because we have been wildly outsexied by fracking. And a lot of the organizations that said, oh, we're going to end mountaintop removal, have moved on to fracking as if the environmental movement can only walk or chew gum. We can't do both at the same time. I mean, I see this stuff. And then you've got the self-congratulatory backpatting articles from the environmental press and allies who put out articles, well, coal is over, mountaintop removal's been defeated. Bullshit! 5,000 acres are waiting to be blasted to kingdom come on one mountain complex alone. Right now. And then you've got the people who are sitting around trying to figure out how to build an economy here when there's no government entity that's interested in building a real viable alternative economy to coal and to extraction industries generally. You've got actual environmental organizations who put out statements saying that mountaintop removal has been effectively ended, when that is a giant lie. You got a lot of people gone to ground in Appalachia right now, angry. Because we're effectively done with 8 years of Obama now, aren't we? I remember a time when we got 2,000-3,000 people out in front of the White House protesting Obama, begging him to do something about mountaintop removal. There's a movie out there that shows Robert F. Kennedy Jr. saying, well, you know, as soon as he took office, I flew in there and I had a talk with Barack Obama, and then he's going to do something about mountaintop removal. He didn't. You know, the 8 years of the Obama war on coal was nothing but a goddamn cynical marketing campaign. What took coal out was fracking. And in the middle of it all, we cut the state government in this state cut taxes on both of them. So that, let's say you need some help filing for maybe Medicaid. Well, if you call your local county DHHR, you can call them. I know this to be a fact. You can call them for 2 months running, and you will never get a human being on the line because staffing has been cut there to an absolute minimum, which, of course, is just a Republican wet dream. If the people can't help people, people can't get help. Therefore, people don't need help. Therefore, we don't need the department. Therefore, slash the budget some more. We've got a governor who all his life was a Republican until Joe Manchin tapped him on the shoulder and said, "No, really, why don't you change your registration to Democrat and run for governor?" And he aw shucks and hillbilly buck and winged his way into the office while he told his Kunta Kinte story. We talked about that. And he just appointed a coal industry executive to head the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection on the promise that we're going to cut some of this bureaucratic red tape that makes it so damn hard to mine coal. And meanwhile, I mean, it was a wake up. This is, I'm not kidding, you've heard me say it, it is a fact. This is the Trumpiest state in the union. The leading employer in West Virginia now is the West Virginia University healthcare system. Number two is Walmart. The coal industry's way the hell down there. There's more florists than there are coal miners. Mountaintop removal workers, at least. And everybody is living in a state of abject fear, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And the tourism industry exists on the back of people who barely make minimum wage. Many of them don't make minimum wage. And they don't even have a damn job for 3 or 4 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. And the Walmart workers aren't making $10 an hour, don't have health care, and nobody's out there putting together a great big master plan to teach Walmart workers to install solar panels. Sorry, Angry, you got me going.
No, that's, you know, I want to relate this to what we're talking about because, you know, meanwhile,
Joe Manchin comes out and proposes to chastise John Lewis.
John Lewis.
Yeah, his remarks were uncalled for.
Yeah, because I get, you know, people to say to me, "Oh, well, you know, you black people complain because they're going to cut." I say, "What makes you think that we're the only people that are going to get hurt?" "Well, I got a job. You know, if you went up and went to work and whatnot." And I'm like, "Oh, really?" So, and I'll say Appalachia, South Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Gary, Indiana, plenty of white folks there don't have shit. Stockton, California, San Bernardino.
Yeah, but I'm gonna come back to something on that, Angry, and you and I have talked about this in the past, and I still haven't gotten a satisfactory answer. I'm not saying you didn't give me one, but I just don't have a satisfactory answer. A couple of minutes ago, Asa up in Vancouver said that was an interesting observation in Angry's part. "The moment I cross the border into Washington, I notice waist sizes double, and we're far from the healthiest nation up here." But dig it. Middle America, white middle America, flyover Rust Belt America, white folks, were not healthy, svelte, well-muscled people with washboard abs on January the 19th, 2009, who suddenly wound up walking around in pajamas and sweatpants and t-shirts and their bellies hanging out from under it on January the 20th, okay? White America has been ignored by wealthy white America a hell of a lot longer than the last 8 years. And I personally sort of resent this notion that somehow everything went to hell for white America in the last 8 years. That's bullshit. That Van Jones is 152.9% correct. That is whitelash.
Yeah, but how do you blame yourself? I mean, Jean-Paul Sartre, one of my favorite philosophers, because Jacques Derrida is first, you know, made it very clear. Communists both made it clear. Can a man condemn himself? And when he asked that question, he was asking about the French occupation of Indochine, otherwise known as Vietnam. Indochine. You know, he's like, you know, can a man condemn himself? Can a man condemn himself? Can the French say to themselves that what the Americans are doing in Vietnam right now is not what the fuck we started and that we still defend in our newspapers? And, you know, it was a big fucking thing when he said that, because he was asking his countrymen, his fellow countrymen, are you going to sit here and say that you had no part in this, that you didn't condone this? And now that things are going south, trying to wash your goddamn hands of it. And he extended that to Cambodia. The French experience, that he extended that to Haiti. You know, and it, nobody wanted to hear that. And it's the same thing that we're dealing with here. I mean, look at this bullshit that's going on about Betty DeVos. It comes out now that her brother is Eric Prince.
Ta-da!
Blackwater or Z fame, right? Who's been quietly from his hideaway in Dubai. You know, he's been, you know, giving information to the Trump, you know, he's been advising the Trump administration. If this was another goddamn country, they would call this a banana republic dictatorship. This looks a lot like Argentina did, right, in the 50s.
Well, I'm scared to death it's going to look more and more. Because, again, Angry, this is the front end. We're not at the middle or the end.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And, you know, here's the Klan showing up. Like you said, they got their robes on in D.C. And he hasn't said a motherfucking word against them yet. And they plan to be there tomorrow in force, armed. And supposedly the Secret Service, who just paid out, what is it, $125 million or $25 million, whatever it is, in racial... bias cases that have been going on throughout the Secret Service for decades. They finally decided that, well, we know you won't get paid under Trump, so we're just going to have to, you know, settle your case right now. I mean, they said that they don't see a problem with this. They don't see a problem with this. You know, where are we supposed to go? Where are we supposed to go? You know, especially if you're of a darker hue, where the fuck are you supposed to go when you got somebody like Ben Carson, who, you know, will point you out?
Oh, you mean in Ben? The crowd, you mean say, yeah, Ben Carson, Hispanic?
What are you talking about?
Oh, when Sean Spicer was asked about the lack of any Hispanics in the cabinet, he said, "Yeah, but we got Ben Carson and Elaine Chao. We got us some diversity."
Oh, really? Yeah, well, one of these motherfuckers said that they're diverse because, you know, he's from Texas, and that's an example of diversity. He's a white man from Texas. I'm as diverse as can goddamn be. You just don't see it. Ask Rick Perry, who doesn't know anything about what the Department of Energy does, but goddamn, I'm going to run it into the ground. I'm going to do a Putney Swope. You thought that Obama was going to watch. Watch.
And then apparently speaking at the Lincoln Memorial today, Trump declared, "My cabinet will have the highest IQ of any cabinet in history." Huge.
Well, that's a goddamn lie. Because he says that his German genes, you know, give him an edge in making deals. In being a smart person, being a smart guy from the other side of Northern Boulevard, it makes him a genius, his German gene. So he doesn't think it's a mistake that he's where he is because he has a German background. It's not me. It's on fucking YouTube. So, yeah. We are where we are. We are where we are because the empire is fucking imploding.
So, well, as we speak, there is a protest. There's a protest going on in D.C. People.
Yeah, they get maced and shit right now.
And people screaming, "Fuck you, Nazi scum! Nazi scum! Fuck you, Nazis!" It's out there on video for those who want to go and find it. Tear gas has been fired, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard about any arrests yet, but they've been getting like pushed into what they call in England kettling, where the police get them into, you know, they're setting them off so that they break them up into smaller groups, makes it easier to intimidate people. So, yeah. So they're doing that to these people, but at the meantime, you have a terrorist group, you know, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, he called them a hate group. No, call them what the fuck they are. They're a goddamn terrorist group.
Domestic terrorist organization.
They destroyed a church with four black girls in it, okay? They, you know, assassinated, you know, civil rights leaders. You know, John Lewis, happened to get lucky. I mean, he's the Andrew Young is gone, so he's one of the last, if not the last, of the more famous on camera we know who you are cats that were part of that era. You know, I used to have neighbors that were down with that, but of course they weren't in front of a camera, so nobody knew their name, but they still got the scars all the same. And you know, that needs to be acknowledged. But one thing I wanted to talk about here, as you know, I'm noticing that the clock is going on. Leonard Peltier is going to still continue to sit in a fucking white man's colonialist prison.
Yep.
While Chelsea Manning is being released, Oscar Lopez is being released. Posada Carriles is still running around in Florida. You know what the fuck is going on?
And meanwhile, they have just extradited El Chapo to the United States.
Yeah, I you know, it's like, well, what the fuck is going on?
Why is it so hard to finally set Leonard Peltier free?
Oh, because you're dealing with what the fuck the United States is all about. I mean, we're looking at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest. It never stopped. You know, Democracy Now! Was able to get...
Well, yeah, and you can't let Leonard Peltier out because the next thing you know, he'll be at Standing Rock, right?
Oh, he'd be there the next goddamn day. He'd be there the next
But there's,
and they know this.
But the other part of it, I think, has a more of a fascist overtone. Angry, and that is this: whether it is Leonard Peltier or Mumia, they both bear the permanent imprint cop killer.
Well, they got to do that because that's the only way they can really silence you, because nobody wants to hear anything once you've been accused of that. Look at Assata Shakur. With all of the police brutality cases that have been going down, and anyone who grew up on the East Coast knows that the New Jersey State Police are some of the most racist cops and have been traditionally in the United States. You know, that they don't like black people. They don't even want black people in the state. I mean, that's been said that, you know, black folks were not welcome in the state of New Jersey once slavery was done away with, that, you know, we weren't needed and we weren't welcome. You got the upstate New York state town of Whitesboro, that on their goddamn the symbol or the branding, the label, whatever the fuck it is for that town,
seal,
is a white man strangling a motherfucking, yeah, the seal, thank you, is a white man strangling an Indian.
Yep.
Strangling a Native American. Anyone can go look this up. Whitesboro. Okay? Like my father, my late dad, used to talk about Lynchburg, Virginia. You know, he was in South Carolina, and he said that, you know, even though people would say, oh, that's not really why it was named that way, he said, that's bullshit. The white people let us fucking know that shit was named Lynchburg because they lynched a lot of motherfuckers in that goddamn village, when it was a village. And, you know, a lot of slaves there got out of the line. line, supposedly, and, you know, they got rid of him. So, you know, it's like when we're looking at this, we need to be fucking honest with ourselves on what Lenin represents and what these protests in North Dakota represent. It's not just a bunch of Indians and shit who just getting antsy because they didn't get their fucking pro-cap check for $17.13 or a motherfucking tribal car or whatever the fuck, or some dividend from a goddamn casino that they didn't want in the first place. You know, the whole fucking point about what's happening at the Dakota Access is the idea that this is Indian land that was never given away in the first goddamn place. And they talk about the 400 motherfucking treaties and the 399 that have been goddamn broken. And it's like, you know, here's another fucking example. You're a native. You can serve in the motherfucking Marine Corps. You can go over and fight in Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan. You can do all of that. But when it comes to our fucking government, the government agreement with you, fuck you. So when it comes to Lenin Peltier, it's what he represents. I mean, they got goddamn missile launchers down there. And they're telling people, well, they're not loaded. But that's not the motherfucking point. The motherfucking point is you have Avenger missiles on fucking Indian land aimed at goddamn Indian people to send the fucking message that if you continue to fucking tell the white man in the United States that we cannot do what the fuck we want to do, we will fucking remove you. We will remove you. There is video out here of Trump telling a fucking Connecticut goddamn gaming board that the people he was basically talking about. You know what? I'm embarrassed to say this because I just forgot their fucking name. But they're a very small nation in New England, and they finally got a casino deal going. And I think there was like two people living on that reservation. And they got a casino going, and or Foxwoods, whatever the nation is behind Foxwoods, because I don't remember. And motherfucking, he said that they don't look like Indians to me. And you're giving these people all this free money, but they don't look like Indians to me. And the white man, and I give him credit. He said, you know, Mr. Trump, it's a goddamn good thing that we don't fucking count on you to decide on who the fuck is native and who isn't. You know, we had a problem in the world in history with that. You know, like the Nazis kind of did things like that. And he said, yeah, well, sir, whatever you want to say, sir, they don't look like Indians to me, sir. Yeah, and you're just giving them free money. How come I can't get a break? This is Donald Trump, because his casino or casinos in Atlantic City, New Jersey, were getting competition from the native casinos in Connecticut.
Right.
And in Vermont and what have you.
And that was the Mashantucket Pequot.
The Pequot, thank you. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say that. Because, see, the Pequot, actually, that's another thing. Because when the money started coming in, and these two or three people who were on this, what was considered to be reservation land, one of them was living in a trailer, if I remember correctly. That's what I got through the native grapevine. You know, motherfucking, they started bringing in people who also had, of course, when you're a coastal native on the East Coast, there's a lot of people who are, you know, black, like me, right? Or Puerto Rican, or Puerto Rican, Boricua. So, motherfucking, they started bringing people in. But it took about 4 or 5 years. Now you got a split between the black Pequot and the white Pequot. You got the, you know, discrepancy between black Seminole and white Seminole. Even though the Gullah people, my particular fucking nation, you know, we're the ones that when we were still fighting white people and running towards Florida, you know, running south and picking up, you know, other rebellious slaves and natives who sometimes burned out or just ran with us because they couldn't continue to fight the encroachment. That is what became the Seminole Nation. It's a mixture of Spanish.
Oh, sure. Down in South Alabama, you've got the Porch Creek Band of the Muscogee people. And like, you know, the southeastern natives were referred to as the five civilized tribes.
Yeah, why?
Because they adopted white ways and took and frankly welcomed intermarriage and intermingling, and arguably, you know, and I've heard it said down, oh, they don't look like damn Indians to me.
Yeah, well, one of the main
The fact of the matter is, they are, and they clung tenaciously, even after the removal, to their to their heritage and their identity.
Well, they also kept on to their slaves. I mean, that's how my family ended up in Oklahoma. You know, because a lot of folks will be like, oh, you know, I mean, there's so many goddamn people that claim to be Cherokee. It's fucking real. And, you know, I've been over the past several years encouraging a lot of black Indians to, you know, find out who owned you, because that's really what it is. And just because some of us are mixed, like me, does not mean that we were not owned. I mean, it was a real fucking shock, because in the black community, there's this thing that goes around that somehow Native American slavery was better than European slavery for us, that we were somehow treated better by Native slave owners. And that's a whole lot of bullshit. I mean, when they got kicked out of Georgia and the Carolinas and what have you in the South and pushed over into Oklahoma, we're the Choctaw. And we're, you know, what was left of the other five civilized tribes who didn't go willingly, because they were already people by the time we got there. You know, my family was, you know, we were carrying their motherfucking bags. You know, when you talk about being black and Native, you know, that's a really fucking serious and tough goddamn subject. But see, nobody wants to get into that, because Leonard Peltier, again, is somebody who was one of the few Natives that was willing to talk about that. When I was in the Seattle area for some time, I was there after Leonard was there, but he was a big part of the Seattle Native community. And he was one of the bridges actually between the black communities in Seattle and the Native community. And he was able to actually bring a lot of black Natives who were not able to be out in either, you know, in either community in. This is something that Anamaya Quash, another sister who was murdered, we believe that she was bad jacketed by the Bureau. And she also was connected to the American Indian Movement. She, too, had connected the black community with the Native community. She also worked in the Chicano community and so on. So this is what Leonard represents. This is what the protests in North Dakota represent. We have a woman who's losing her eye, who lost her eye, somebody else who lost their arm, I believe, or their arm is badly mangled. You know, we have all these people who have been damaged in these protests. Nobody wants to talk about this, because if you talk about this, then you got to talk about the land question, then the land question, then the genocide question. You know, two generations of indigenous women who have been sterilized. And I'm sorry for the long-winded, you know, thing, but that's what Leonard represents. And for Obama to be a man of color who, as I said, didn't do a goddamn thing for black people as a block when he was in office, made fucking sure that he didn't do a goddamn thing for Native people either. And I'm not against Chelsea Manning being released, because Chelsea
Manning should never have been there in the first place.
No, you know, Oscar Lopez, of course he should fucking be released. There's a lot of people that are in there that have no fucking business being in.
Well, the fact of the matter is, the commutation program that was initially envisioned by the Obama administration was supposed to commute the sentences of as many as 10,000 prisoners. But it fell short by a little less than 9,000 for a variety of reasons. One of which is they set up a vetting process that couldn't realistically be met by 10,000 incarcerated people. And they were, you know, and again, they were focused not on political prisoners like Leonard Peltier, but on so-called nonviolent drug offenders. And the process of vetting was unnecessarily complex, and it got so bad that at least one and there were volunteer lawyers doing this work, you know, not even on the payroll.
And praise each one of them for doing that, because that's.
But at least one of them got disgusted and said, "Nah, I'm out of here. This is wrong." You know, Chelsea Manning was, and I don't want to come off the wrong way with this, but Chelsea Manning was a sop thrown to the alleged left.
Mm-hmm.
And it had international diplomatic implications. It impacted, to a certain extent, the position of the cult of Julian Assange. And so there were multiple reasons to do it. Beyond the fact, as Barack Obama said, he felt like she had been punished more than enough.
Yeah, but he's the one who punished her. He's the one who put her in a fucking all-male jail and had her.
Well, the military complex was certainly, and they are answerable to him. But the problem is that while you and I sit here and the Horn Family Community Congregation is in complete agreement, and probably most of the left media consuming country are in agreement, Leonard Peltier simply does not have the sufficient constituency to get him the hell out of there.
Well, yeah, why? Because who is that constituency? Is Native people. You know, we don't exist. You know, according to Trump, we don't exist. According to his supporters, we don't exist. According to a whole lot of fucking people, we don't exist. We're not real.
Yeah.
You know, we're not real. So they're
just, I mean, like, I was a little taken aback when Sean Spicer, in talking about the diversity of the cabinet, you know, he said, we got Ben Carson, we got Elaine Chao, and then he said, we've got Nikki Haley, the first Indian American.
Who's a fascist?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I understand what he means by Indian in that context, but no, I'm sorry. There are no tribal members on this cabinet either. So maybe the proper reference is the first Sikh American.
Yeah, but then you got to explain what that is. You know, and that's hard. And
yeah, I know, but the Trump pansies are wandering around out there now, wondering if Nikki Haley's a Blackfoot, a Crow, or a Sioux.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Nah, she's right. From South Carolina. She's probably Cherokee. I got some Cherokee in me. I just can't prove it.
Well, yeah, but no matter what, she's going to say that she's an American, and she's going to screw. That and she's going to argue that as much as anything. She's going to do a Dinesh D'Souza, a Piyush Jindal. You know, you can't say that they're not, you know, children of the South. You know, I mean, I go online now, I see there are black people who call themselves redneck. Of course, they're the only person standing amongst these other white folks, and they're saying that they're redneck, and redneck is a state of mind and what have you. I'm not from the South, so I don't know. I remember getting into a very long discussion with a date who wanted me to understand this.
Yeah, redneck is kind of a complicated term. It's got labor roots. Yeah. It's got roots in labor. It's got roots in insurrection. It's got roots in tenant agriculture. So
well, I mean, she was very. You know, she wanted to
I mean, that's like me calling
myself.
I got family members that get right pissed off at the fact that I call myself a hillbilly. But you're not. You're educated, Bob. You're smart. And they were born here. So you get the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, where do we go?
And you know, it would be nice, except for the fact that I know how it would be structured, angry. It would be nice if we could have some sort of great national coming together where we figured out what the resistance was and how it. But, oh, my God, it would be based on consensus-based decision-making, and there would be more passive-aggressive filibustering than you can even begin to imagine.
It wouldn't get off the ground.
No. It'd just be a talk fest.
Well, I mean,
we can do that here.
Yeah, everything would be tabled to the next meeting. Tabled. Okay, it's too late to do anything. Okay, so we need to form another subcommittee and then split that into three or four other subcommittees to figure out what we should do 3 years from now, even though we really need to figure this out by next week. Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing that the left is really fucked up about, is not being, in this country anyway, is not being able to get their fucking shit together. I can go to Mexico and see the left is organized. I can go up to Canada and see the left is very fucking organized. Anywhere in Europe, anywhere in Asia, South America, Africa. They know what the stakes are. They know what they're
doing. Well, and it's also because the left in the United States is actually right of center in most social democratic countries. The left in the United States would be a laughingstock in Germany or France or Great Britain or any of the Scandinavian countries or Italy or hell, even Australia or Canada. Because the left in the United States would just like for the fascists to behave with a little bit more decently. You know, I mean, we still want to have 375-inch big screen TVs and everything, and we want all the accoutrements of capitalism. But, you know, that whole workers of the world thing, unite. No.
See, but everybody here is a temporary pauper. You know,
right.
It's a matter of
temporarily embarrassed millionaires.
Yeah. So, you know, if I'm going to be rich one day, possibly, and I can be like Trump, and grab all the pussy I want and be able to disrespect anybody I want on Twitter and, you know, bar the press for my inauguration, the bar them for my hotels to not answer any questions I don't want to fucking answer, to have meetings with governments that are working against the United States that I've even admitted over the weekend anyway when the press corps isn't doing any goddamn thing that, they did hack our servers, but, you know, so... Or what? I mean, they said that the celebrations in Moscow for Trump over the past several days have been ridiculous. Everybody every news agency in the world is reporting about this, and I guess maybe what the Washington Post, but I'm not hearing any discussion in this country about that. Why is Moscow happy about an American election?
Well, I mean, we know the answer because they own him. Well, let's at least end this on a happy note, shall we? I was just reminded, and I'm glad I was. I was just reminded by Gerald. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals today considered the appeal of one inmate Don Blankenship, and they laughed. Because Don Blankenship, and they laughed his appeal right out of the courtroom. Now, as Gerald points out, the bad news is the son of a bitch gets out in May.
So how do your neighbors feel about that?
There's way too many West Virginians that think he got a raw deal. He's just trying to mine coal. We got to mine coal here. I mean, he's mining coal in the middle of war on coal for that goddamn Obama. That's just that Obama trying to get him. Because he knew what Obama was, that communist. Because he used to talk to chambers of commerce and rotary clubs and shit and call Barack Obama a communist. Yeah. Got to get out of here, Angry. Thank you kindly, my friend.
All right, everybody. Do what you can, man. Support this show. Please visit headonradio.com. Hit the donate button. Do what you can to keep the show on the air. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. Headonradionetwork.com. Newly redesigned. Nicely, I would say, Ed. By John Fox. Thank you, John. And we will close the program with $85 to go in fundraising to finish the evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. And thanks all of you for participating in this conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.